This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
All right, welcome in, everybody, to the Stick and Hack program. I'm your host, Adam Grubb, the hack, and that's Mike Ryan there, the stick. Mike.
Hey, buddy.
What is up?
You know, surviving.
You're still in your house. Why don't you get out every now and then?
I haven't left in like 3 weeks. You're at all.
We are the most sophisticated golf show in the free world, and now over 1,000 members strong for the Stick and Hack membership. Go to stickandhack.com and become a member today of the greatest golf club in the world without the course. Over 1,000 people have signed up and to be part of our club, Mike. It's very exciting. It was a good milestone for us as we come upon a year of Stick and Hack and the Stick and Hack show next month. Actually, this month, now that I think about it, it's a very, very exciting time for us. And this is episode 22.
I know.
All right.
It's incredible.
Right. And what would you say of those 22 episodes is your favorite moment of all time?
Favorite moment of all time.
Right. I just put that, threw that in there at the beginning.
It's definitely the James Dobson episode.
Oh, yeah. The author. The story of Arnie Palmer and all that. Go back if you have nothing else to do, which we all know you don't. Go back and listen to that show. It was a favorite of ours. All right, we've got a tremendous guest and I think timely guest talking to us about mental toughness. Dr. Rob Bell is on the show today. Dr. Rob Bell is coming up here in just a little bit with us, and we're going to be talking about the mental toughness of the game. Rob, are you prepared for this? Are you excited for the Stick and Hack, your first Stick and Hack appearance?
Well, as long as you send me the questions beforehand, I don't want any curveballs coming at me.
We don't do that here.
I don't get that privilege there, Rob. No,
nobody does. This is all hidden behind a locked door for most of the week. So Rob Bell's coming up here in just a little bit, and we're excited to talk to him. All right, so Mike, first up here, the greatest golf course you've never heard of. Now, this was an incredible story in the New York Times several years ago that I stumbled upon, and most of this is from that article. I've not written any of my own stuff here, as you can possibly imagine. But the New York Times article talks about this course, and it's a half hour west of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Now, there's no secret that golf at a time was dying, and courses were being built at a prolific pace, but people weren't playing the courses. And golf is expensive. There's a lot of barriers into the sport. We talk about this a lot on the show. And this guy, his name is Rob Collins. He's a landscape architect and a designer. He worked for some a golf course. And in 2008, when the world stopped then as well, for the financial meltdown, he was literally raking a bunker when Bear Stearns collapsed, and he basically didn't have a job afternoon. And so he went out and decided to try to figure out why golf courses weren't what he thought they could be, which were affordable. They were quick and they were pristine and they were amazing. And so he went out and found this this piece of land that was first of all, let me give you a couple facts. 4,500 golf courses, and you might find this surprising, Mike. In between 1990 and 2006, more than 4,500 golf courses were opened in the United States. Now, most of that was fueled by Tiger Woods and the rise of golf through the Tiger Woods era. But pre-recession, more people were buying homes that they could afford, and they were all around golf courses. And all of a sudden, you see all these golf courses not being used and homes being foreclosed on. It was a bad, bad time. Yep. And I don't know if you remember that or not.
Because
That was at that point, golf was at its peak. Tiger was at his peak. And then Tiger had his issues. And then the world had.
It was like when his world went to shit. So did everything.
His world collapsed. And then the markets collapsed. So anyway, so Rob Collins at this time in 2010 started his own design firm. And he went out and found this land that was just west of west of Chattanooga, Tennessee. And he thought to himself, what if golf's rapid decline was not just the result of the recession, but rather the courses themselves were to blame? And this is something that you've talked about before.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the idea that it's this race to make these longer courses, more difficult courses, And that you somehow have to take up more land and make golf courses longer to stay up with the technology, I think is a falsehood. I think you're going to start to see it. And I think you've started to see it is, golf course design is going to start going back more to its roots and trying to design golf courses that are more strategic in their layout. And, I just think I don't think the whole expand to a longer course is the right strategy because it's more expensive. And B, I don't think it necessarily lends itself to quality golf design.
No, it doesn't. And in fact, this Rob said the same thing and he designed a course that's 9 holes.
Right.
This is a 9 hole course in this pristine land that was owned by Parkland, the insolvent Parkland course at the time in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee, population 3,000. It had been purchased as a side project of a local concrete company who was either going to demolish it and turn it into a parking lot for themselves, or they were going to try to bring it back to its roots. And so they hired Rob Collins, who came in. He designed a 9-hole course, which at this point, Golf Week ranked Sweetens Golf Cove Golf Club the number 49 modern golf course in America and the number one course you can play in Tennessee for 4 consecutive years. It opened in 2014. And by 2016, people, by the way, $1 million to design and create this course.
Yeah.
$1 million, which is 10%
typically should be. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Absolutely. That's a pittance.
Right. He had a skeleton crew. For long hours, low pay, accelerated timeline, other architects and prospective owners circled around this course saying, hey, we want to buy this property. We want to be a part of this. And he's like, no, we're good. So he mortgaged everything.
Yeah.
And in desperation, he took over the lease himself and he said, I'm going to make this happen. There was no money when they opened to keep the maintenance staff on, no money to pave a parking lot, no money to build a clubhouse. No money to do any marketing of the course at all. It sounds like stick and hack, for God's sake. But people started hearing about it.
It's the first stick and hack golf course.
it's one hole in my backyard.
Yeah.
People started hearing about it and traveling all over the place to this course because of its design, because of its uniqueness, because of its simplicity. Golf was the focus, not the glamorous clubhouse, not the glamorous membership. Who's a member? Who's not? Your locker room? None of that.
Yeah.
You change your clothes in the parking lot. You put your shoes on in the parking lot. No member notes, no weirdness. You go out, you play 9 holes for $20.
Yeah.
It's awesome. $20, 9 holes.
Yeah.
And a buddy of mine just told me yesterday how he was looking for a par 3 for his son, who's 12, and he's trying to get him involved in golf.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, where are the par 3s? I'm like, I have no idea. I don't
know. Making them. Yeah. Yeah. They stopped making them. I think it's crazy. Most golf courses these days that I see open up, there are very few of them that have a par 3 built into them. And that used to be something that you would see quite a bit of. And even when I was growing up, the course that I played a lot, that was a public course, they actually had a par 3. It was an older course that had been built back, I think probably in the 70s. And it had a par 3. And that's when I was young and I was just learning the game. I had to play the par 3. They wouldn't let you on the big course. You had to basically prove. Yeah.
I'm 41 years old.
For sure.
Right. You can't have a big boy course.
Yeah. You had to prove yourself. Yeah. And until you could show that you could shoot certain scores on that par 3, they wouldn't let you go out on the big course.
That's pretty cool. It's kind of like bunny slopes in skiing.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that's missing. More 9-hole courses. $20 to walk. It's an extra 10 for a cart.
Yeah.
And I guess people say you can play this thing 20 times and play it differently every single time. They have multiple tee boxes. They have these cool design elements, but also it's this pristine, awesome land in Tennessee that it's this hidden gem, this secret. And if you know about this course, you know something somebody else doesn't. Sweetens Cove Golf Club is the course. It's a their locker room is a single blue porta potty. The clubhouse is a 20-foot by 10-foot aluminum shed. And you probably won't even realize that you've stumbled upon a golf course until you see T1.
Yeah.
So pretty cool. And
yeah,
and what I think is something that should be looked at as, hey, maybe this is the resurgence and the next wave of golf. Everything's changing in our world now anyway.
Right.
So why not? Why don't we just do that? Let's walk nine holes. Let's have a par three. And you pay $20 and you go play golf. No more of this monthly minimum crap. Just let me play golf.
No, I think it's a this is the first time I'd actually heard of this course. And B, I really want to go down there and check it out because it's not that far from, it wouldn't be that far for us to travel. I think you and I should go down there and give it a shot.
We might do that. In fact, there was in the New York Times article, one of the guys said that he belongs to a club in Georgia, some 75, 80 miles away from this course. Yet he drives up because it's so great.
For sure.
All right. There's your first up. Now we move into the conversation. Mental toughness coach and author, Dr. Rob Bell. Dr. Rob Bell, welcome in to the Stick and Hack Show, sir.
I think you guys should do a road trip down to Sweetens Cove and like do a show there. That would be cool.
Yeah. The parking lot. It would be
in the porta potty.
Yeah. Yes. In the porta potty. It would be complete Stick and Hack style. there is no room for us to even put our gear out there. So I love it. So you're a mental toughness coach, which sounds impressive, and I can assume that people come up to you all the time, like we're doing now. We brought you on the show for this very reason, and say, "Hey, how do I become more mentally tough?" And you say, "Well, hold on a second, Chief. Let's peel back the onion a little bit. Let's figure out what that means. You're not just for athletes. You're not just for sports. You are looking at the mental toughness of everybody, and now more than ever." We need mental toughness in our society and in our world. Would you agree that right now you have seen an uptick in people's need for how the hell do I get through this?
You know, we always say like adversity builds character, and it does, but it reveals character. I think a lot of times, especially what we're going through now, is we see people that deal and handle it better and that people that, you know, struggle with it. You know, adversity is like the key. You know, we have to have adversity in order to be mentally tough. Like if everything is easy, then, you know, how much joy is there? But we don't have to be mentally tough when things are going well. So I always say, like, if ever I'm speaking to a group, hey, raise your hand if you really want to have a tough week. You know, nobody raises their hand. Nobody wants to go through that adversity. But that's the only kind of situation where we do get mentally tough. And now, like, we don't have a choice. Like, we have to be tough through this kind of situation.
So your job... And you're an author, you're a speaker, you're a trainer. You've written a book, Mental Toughness Training for Golf, specific to the sport of golf. And also No One Gets There Alone, among many other books. And tell me about The Hinge. I see that in the back there. And I know you've written a couple things about The Hinge, specifically for, I think, football. What is your athletic background and how did you come to find this career?
So my athletic background was... I mean, I played baseball and soccer. That's what I always enjoyed. I didn't really start playing golf until college. And when I got to college, though, I was a little D2 school in West Virginia. And I discovered this thing called partying, probably my senior year, junior year, sophomore year in high school. And if it was a class, I mean, I would have got an A+ in that. So when I got to college, though, I was like, man, I got partying and baseball and no responsibility. Like, what could possibly go wrong? So when I got to college partying, I actually, you know, I always tell my groups that too, especially the younger ones, like nothing good happens after midnight. And this was after midnight. For some reason, we're partying near this bridge in West Virginia. Near this bridge was this cliff. And I ended up walking off an 80-foot cliff. You know, I didn't jump. I wasn't pushed. I just absolutely had no idea where I was. And, you know, baseball from that point then was completely over. But if it wasn't for that Hinge moment, like I wouldn't have taken that psychology class and I wouldn't have, when I took that first psychology class, it was like a tattoo on my heart. I was like, this is what I want to do. So I knew I always wanted to do something with sports, but when I knew about that, I was like, man, that mental game. Cause I was always type of athlete that always thought too much. You know, I could never get outside my own head and nobody could ever help me out with that. No one could ever say the only thing they ever said was, well, once you get going in the game, it'll leave. It never left me. I was always stuck inside my own head. I was behind enemy lines. And that's how I got into that field. And that was the premise of The Hinge is, look, I don't care how bad things are in our life. you know, how bleak an outcome is. It takes one shot to turn everything around, one person that we're going to meet or one opportunity to make all the difference in our lives. That's what we're getting ready for. And that's the real importance of mental toughness.
And that has been something that has been studied and looked at, the science of the mental toughness, especially when it comes to golf. There is a big moment where you look at a golfer and their emotions and their control and their visualization, and all athletes really, is long studied. Do you find that part of this, the science of the emotional and the mental game, very exciting? And do you find that it's really what brought you to this study to begin with?
You know, what can be applied in sports can be applied in life, and then vice versa, right? Like what we learn in life can be applied to sports. I mean, you know, I'm obsessive when it comes to this stuff. I mean, it's what I think about first thing in the morning when I go for my run, and it's what I think about after I tuck my kids into bed, man, is, you know, how do we get better and what are the areas in our life we have to get better at? You know, I think we think of mental toughness, like the stigma around it is, well, it's just flipping big tires, like it's some physical exertion, which, you know, that's part of it, but there's not a lot of physical exertion when it comes to golf here. And then the other part is that I think the wrong part about mental toughness is like, I've got to do it on my own. And that's where I think it's the complete opposite. I think when we allow ourselves to be coachable, man, that's a big step towards our mental toughness. Like I always say, I want my athletes to be a little bit stubborn. Like we got to be stubborn, but we got to be coachable at the same time. Then I think that's how we grow and get better at it.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's great. Rob, you know, you talked a little bit about, we don't get better during the good times. And, you know, we're not able to become mentally tough until we go through some adversity. But you know, when we're going through that adversity, obviously there's a lot of negative that can be associated with that. You know, what do you do when that negative creeps in? How do you overcome that? What do you tell your students?
Well, why don't you tell me, Stick?
Well, I've had a long track record of it's not that easy, even for, I would even say for good golfers, it's hard to overcome the negative, even if you are a good golfer or good at any sport in general. I think it's a challenge for sure.
We were playing last week, and you know, I think playing right now is just it's a blessing to be out there. You know, so I'm not really focused that much on score and just playing with my son and playing with another good golfer. And the adversity hit me when I piped my drive on number 9 and I got 240 in and it's downwind and I flush it. And I know it's going to be up there. I think it's just going to be right past the green, you know, right over.
Yeah.
When I got up there, I could not find the ball. And that was the situation that set me off. Like that was the one. And automatically, man, my walk to number 10, I was upset. My walk was different. My thoughts were different. And then how do you think that next tee shot went?
Oh,
you betcha. Yeah. Duck hook left
because
of all the tension and everything. And that's the part about golf that's so spectacular is, look, if you don't want the adversity, too bad, because you're going to have at some point it's going to show up. It's just the way I think we deal with it is like, what is our plan? We have to have that mental game plan going in. And then that's going to be that foundation that I think we can always get back to. If there's no plan, if it's just like, hey, just shoot a certain score, then when that adversity hits, we're not going to have a backdrop. We're not going to be able to deal with it effectively. And you know, it's going to take the 3-4 holes and then we get back to normal, but you know, then the damage is really done.
Yeah. Well, Mike Tyson famously said, everybody has a game plan until they get punched in the face, which is golf does constantly punch you in the face. And your example is an example that everybody goes through. In any sport, you think that something's going to happen. You plan for it. You prepare for it. You have this whole thing. And then one thing derails it. And that's where that mental toughness comes in. How do you truly forget and move on to the next shot, which sounds so easy in theory. And you say, okay, forget that. You know, on to the next one, on to the next one. You can't do it. You have to be truly trained. And you have to have a system internally, mentally to cathartically dispel whatever that might be that's happening in your head. And so for your studies and what you train and what you have taught professional athletes for years, do they have the same problems that an amateur has when it comes to that? Or are they more in tune with their own psychology and with their own abilities to move that needle a little bit quicker than an amateur?
That's a great question, man. You know, everybody gets cut off in traffic, and you know, a pro's reaction is probably going to be the same thing. What I say we got to do is we have to respond rather than react. You know, I remember one of the first events I was ever at when Matt Kuchar was on web.com tour, you know, it was 2006. And I just went out there on tour just trying to get clients. You know, I doubled my client base that week, so I still had zero at the end of that week. But he was there on, you know, it was a Tuesday, 6 p.m. He was the only one that was out there. And I was just kind of watching. I just kind of asked him what he was working on. And he just said, you know, he was just striping six irons. And he said it was basically his takeaway. And I remember thinking, I was like, that's what I'm working on. You know, what do you mean your takeaway about how good you are? So it's just magnified at a different level about what they work on. Now, the part about pros is when their livelihood then becomes part of it, you know, then, you know, it's always getting back to preparation. Are they willing to do the work that they don't want to do necessarily?
Right.
And always getting past. I mean, because again, we just want to hit the ball better. And there's just going to be only so many greens that we kind of deal with. A lot of times, like I said at the beginning, it is about playing your best, but it's about having a good crappy day. You know, I want my golfers that are going to be out there, my pros, is on your worst day, can you still beat people at your best? Then that's the part about mental toughness that I think really shows up. But the triggers are always the same, man. You know, we all have those demons. And like I said, I mean, once you reach a new level in your game, there's going to be a new devil. You know,
I need to take a quick detour here. You have said three things in the last 12 seconds, and I'm going to put on a shirt and sell for stick.
Yes.
So much money. It's not even funny. I need you to know that right now. And I'm going to tell the world that I am taking credit for those sayings.
Okay? Got it, man. I borrowed it from somewhere, I'm sure.
That's fine. Just call him and let him know. We'll put it on a shirt. No, everybody knows it. That's what's funny about this arena is that everybody knows what we do. We all have the same thing. So whether it's at golf, whether it's work, whether it's with your kids and your family, whatever that might be, because right now stress level in this house, I don't know what it's like for you, Rob, but stress level at this house is at an all time high. All right. And the things that are coming out of people's mouths in this house is frightening. To be quite honest with you, after 60 days of quarantine, we are in a spot, and there needs to be that toughness in your home. There needs to be toughness at work. There needs to be that ability to flip the switch, flip the script on an instant, on a dime, and it is seemingly impossible. How does somebody do that?
So when it's all said and done, I think here's another one for you. When it's all said and done, more is said than done. And so we had a baseball coach, man, he would always pull out this ace card, and action changes everything. You know, we can act our way into right thinking easier. We can think our way into right acting. So before this podcast start, right, I shut the door and I yell at my family, hey, make sure you be quiet, 'cause I got a podcast that's going on. And you know, was that the best? Probably not.
But it was necessary.
Right, man.
It was necessary.
Desperate, desperate times. Desperate measures. I think it's a conversation that we have with ourselves. It's a conversation we got with ourselves. It's a conversation we have with our loved ones. It's not a one-time deal. It's not one time you can say, all right, man, today I'm going to be mentally tough. It's a constant, you know, when we wake up in the morning, are we winning that first battle of the day? That first battle of the day when that alarm goes off, right? Am I going to hit the snooze, or am I going to get up and get out? Because our brain doesn't care about us getting better, doesn't care about us being great or reaching our goals. Our brain just wants us to be safe. Well, man, how do we get safe? Stay warm and cozy and stay in your bed.
Yep.
Well, that doesn't work. That doesn't give us the joy and satisfaction in life. So I think it's just one, knowing that it's going to happen and knowing what our triggers are, and be willing to stare at that and to be willing to have the tough conversations, I think, with ourselves. That's the real tough part.
Yeah. I love all of that, Rob. And one of the things, you know, as I sit here and think about this, a lot of our listeners probably, you know, they don't spend a lot of time consciously thinking about how do they stay mentally tough and not just playing golf, but in life in general. And there may be scenarios where they come up where they know they're going to be going through some adversity and they may not know how to approach it. What is some advice you can give people so that they can build confidence quickly, something that they can do if they're going into a situation that they may not necessarily be comfortable with, build that confidence and feel like they can push through the adversity?
Why don't you tell me?
This is how this is going to go. All right, fine.
I actually do have one on this one, you know, to build confidence quick. I actually have one. And it's one that I think all my athletes love it. It's easy to apply because, you know, confidence is competence. And it's not like it's just floating around in the cloud. We can just pull it out there. But the one thing I think we have to do is, and this is applies to golf and applies to life, is get big. Like, get big. I think before you hit that tee shot, you know, before you're stepping into the shot, you got to throw those shoulders back and that head up, and you have to feel yourself get big. You know, if you watch like a pitcher, it's going to be on the mound, man, that presence that they have. So body language does talk, screams. Sometimes it swears. You watch somebody's body language when stuff's going bad and the shoulders are hunched over and their head is down. And we have to act our way into right thinking and get big. You got to feel yourself get big. And I think that's the easiest way. But then what happens is that mind-body connection, your mind automatically then starts saying, well, I mean, my body language is big. I must be confident. And that's where it's hitting that subconscious level. So, you know, be able to walk tall. And you know, I'd say when pressure hits, sometimes we got to walk, you know, more slowly. But no matter what we're going to be doing, we have to get big. So the shoulders back and head up, everything that we're doing. Instant confidence. Yeah, I love that.
I walk the way you described. I walk that way from tee box one until the end of the round, just slumped over, defeated, deflated, and wondering why the hell I play this game. So,
oh, we all do.
Yeah. So, thank you. I guess for the advice is what I'm saying. So, I'll try that.
I mean, the weird thing about life now is like golf actually makes more sense than life that we're going through, doesn't it? Like golf's the craziest game to begin with. I mean, we're going to take that little white ball and hit it, and that's going to define how we feel about ourselves and make our day or ruin our day. It's how we compare ourselves to others. And now it actually makes more sense than the stuff we're going through with life. I mean, right. Figure it out.
Yeah. No, you figure it out. It's your job.
I get paid for that.
Dr. Rob Bell is the guest. He is an esteemed author and a speaker and a mental toughness coach. You have worked with many, many famous athletes, and you've been to a lot of tournaments. You've been to a lot of big stage moments. But there's nobody historically that's better on the big stage and arguably in golf than Tiger Woods. And Earl Woods, his father, famously quoted as saying, "You will never find somebody as mentally tough as Tiger." And that was early. That was early in his career. That was in the 90s that Earl said that. And part of that reason being is that he had taught him almost to a if you read Hank Haney's book or any books about Tiger, it's almost like, man, this kid had no life. He had no world outside of golf and being successful. But there is a toughness to Tiger that nobody else has. And in his prime, and even still to this day, in his prime, he was an assassin. And if you came up against him, you knew that you were not going to out mentally tough him. Is that a phrase?
It is now.
Put that on a t-shirt. Yeah. There it is. You actually came up with that one.
That one I actually did come up with. And it will not sell a single shirt. Oh, holy cow. What was my question? Oh, yeah. What do you know about Tiger and his upbringing? And is he somebody that you would study in years to come about how he prepared for the game?
So it's like Tiger, we hear about athletes moving the needle. Tiger doesn't move the needle. Tiger is the needle. That's the best way to describe it. And especially what we saw in early 2000s, I thought this one was great. I mean, because I think the best part about Tiger was the consistency, like the streak that he had with his made cuts. Dude, that's still the best one, I think. Because you're telling me nothing's going to happen where you go triple and then bogey and you're just going to miss a cut. Like, I don't know any pros that go through that stuff that don't have a bad week. That's the part. So when you look at Tiger, the most underrated golfer in those early 2000s was Tiger. That's how he was. Most underrated was Tiger Woods.
Right.
So, I mean, I think when you look at the best, you're going to see some common themes, right? When you look at even like a Larry Bird, you know, Larry Bird said, man, you're playing for second place. Mm-hmm. And it's that mentality they got to have. You know, Michael Phelps, yep. Same exact way. You know, Tamika Catchings, same exact way, man. I mean, in mental toughness, though, it's caught more than it's taught. Like, it's how we, you know, our upbringing has a really big part with it. And it's, you know, how are we going to respond to that adversity and what's the vision that we have with ourselves? And that's where then, you know, we're baking a cake here, man. We can't read the instructions, expect the cake to appear. We have to be able to go through that stuff. And then what we get is we get that confidence and that belief in ourselves. See, that's the thing that we look at, that it just can't be the belief in yourself that has it. But I tell you what, it is. Yeah. And then once you get a little bit of success and the belief grows, once the belief grows, then you get a little bit more success. I mean, we're still talking about the defending Masters champion right now. And this is a good one from defending Masters champ, like with, you know, and the type of focus he had, like Tony Finau, you know, asked him during that last round, you know, how are the kids? His reply, fine. That was it. And then it was right back because, yeah. I mean, what did Tiger do the day that he won, right? He woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. That's all the tee times were early.
Yeah.
He woke up at 4 o'clock for that 9 o'clock tee time. And that's the part that we do not see
Right.
is how obsessive that they are with all the things that they go through.
Yeah. When people ask me how my kids are, I say the same thing though. Fine.
Just yeah.
Fine. Exactly. And I get up at 4 a.m. for 9 a.m. tee time just to get there early so I could just be there and just sit in the parking lot in silence. All right. You got to understand, 60 days here in this house has really caused me a complete mental breakdown. So this is timely that you're on the show. Michael Jordan's new series, the documentary series on ESPN playing currently. And in episode 1 or 2, he said, if I'm going to lose, I'm pissed off. And his... just like everybody else that you mentioned, that was his mentality. And whether you like Jordan or not, he had the exact same killer instinct and that exact same toughness of I'm going to win and I'm going to beat you. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. The Last Dance. I mean, and that's the piece that everybody has. I mean, the part that made Jordan so great, man, is how hard he worked. You know, and I think what we got to do is we got to be able to separate, you know, the athlete from then the person. Because I mean, look, I've met a lot of golfers out there on tour, right? Some are like fantastic people, and some are not people that you'd want to introduce to anybody. But just because they're great at one thing doesn't make them great at like everything in life, you know? And I think that's the part we got to be able to separate. Just because somebody wins the Masters doesn't make them a great person. But what are the pieces, what are the characteristics that we can take from that individual and then be able to apply to our life? You know, I mean, again, Jordan was cut his sophomore year. And when he shows up in North Carolina, even then, right, like Roy Williams tells him, hey, man, if you want to, you know, he tells him, look, I want to be the best to ever come out of North Carolina. Roy Williams tells him, well, you better work a whole lot harder than you did in high school. He says, well, wait a minute. I worked as hard as anybody. And then Roy Williams was like, what? He said, wait a minute. I thought you said you wanted to be the best. You know, that's a whole other level. Whole nother obsession that you have to get to in order to be the best at what you do.
Yeah. No, that's you're exactly right.
That's why you're so good at what you do, man.
Yes, that's why we're incredible. And we are at the top of our game. Look at us. Look at us. I've shaved weeks. Things are bad. All right. So we have a member question. So Mike and I have every Thursday night we have a happy hour with our members. And this past happy hour, one of our members, I told them that you were going to be on the show, and his question was, how do you relax? Not you specifically. I don't think he cares about you. I'm saying how does somebody relax?
Did you ask him how he relaxed?
Hey, I'm going to be honest with you. I think of all of the members, Paul is one of the most relaxed that we have. And it was ironic that he was asking that question, but I should have said, how do you do it, Paul?
Man, how I do, man. I run 10 miles in the morning. That's how I relax. I mean, God.
Oh no.
Well, I'm look, man, I'm a nut. I got a 100-mile race this year. So,
100-mile race.
Yeah, I got a 100-miler in October. So hopefully that thing won't be canceled. But yeah, so
no kidding. Hopefully it'll be canceled.
Those they call those ultra marathons, isn't that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Well, Rob, you sir are a marvel, and we appreciate you being on the show, Dr. Rob Bell. And
you want me to answer that question though?
Oh yeah. How do you relax? You said you ran 400 miles a day. That's not relaxing to me. So I moved on.
Oh yeah. I apologize. Well, here's what it does, man, is we got to be breathing. I think, you know, it's just got to be focused on our breathing. I think it's something we do like on the course, like before showing up. And then, and man, no matter what, we got to get back to like, what's the goal? The goal should be is to have fun. Like, especially now, right? Like, I don't care about what score you care what I do. I don't care what you should. I just want to play well. And I think you care what I do, and that's what impacts my play, right? But man, if we can go in there, look, my only goal is to have fun. And that's why I think the last three rounds I played have been so enjoyable, because I don't really care. It really does not matter in this kind of situation. What matters is man, I'm not going to let anything spoil my opportunity being out here and trying to get sane with this insane game. I think if you have that as a goal, man, then it takes care of everything else.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Indeed.
It kind of reminds me, it reminds me of the saying, you know, don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff, especially golf. So that's my,
what do you think of that, Rob?
That's my opinion.
But
to go on a t-shirt, man.
Oh my God, we're gonna be rich.
Quoteth the stick.
Yeah, well, if you want it, take it. All right, you've got we're gonna be giving away you have a new book coming out next month, and we're gonna be giving that away to a lucky member here in the next couple weeks. But tell us about your new book that you have coming out. It's called Puke and Rally.
Puke and Rally. That's right, man. It's not about the setback. It's about the comeback. So it's not how to extend your fifth year celebrations in college. It's just the fact of like, we're all going to puke. It's just how we come back from that. Can I share a quick story from it?
Yeah, please. Time? Yeah, please.
I mean, think about this, right? So Jordan Spieth, 2016 Masters. This was the one where he had a 5-shot lead heading in the back nine, right? So everyone says, look, the Masters doesn't start to the back nine. Every writer was penning, hey, that's over with because he's won it. And then what happens at number 12, right? I mean, dumps two in the water, takes a quadruple bogey, first quad ever that he ever had in pro competition. This is, I mean, he was number one the year before. I mean, one tour championship, already had two majors, and that happens to him. It's not about the setback. It's about the comeback. The next year at Royal Birkdale, when he then hit it off the charts on number 13 playing Kuchar, and we all know that one. I mean, then he saves bogey, best bogey I've ever seen. Yep. And then he goes birdie, birdie, eagle, birdie. Look, if it wasn't for the setback, there wasn't going to be the comeback for it. So the fact of like, we all have to go through that adversity, and just knowing that that setback is setting us up for that comeback. That's the part that's so important, man. So it's like, if, like you said at the very beginning, if we can overcome that one mistake, then we're on our way to already being able to rally. That's the part that's huge.
Dr. Rob Bell, a pleasure to have you on the show, sir, and continued success and good luck in your career. DrRobBell.com for his training, for speaking engagements once we can get back out into the world, as well as his books there as well. Rob, thank you so much, sir. Enjoy the rest of your day.
I appreciate you, man.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Rob. There he goes, Dr. Rob Bell. Lessons, books, and more, DrRobBell.com. Mike, if there's ever a show that needs me to listen to my own show again, it's this one.
Yeah.
That dude just kept firing out things that I couldn't even write down fast enough.
Yeah, it's great. No, that was great. He had a lot of really, I think, good advice, and thinking about it from the broader point of view, not just from golf, but from life and all of the things that everyone's going through right now from the mental aspect. I think it's really great advice that I think people can take away from that and really apply to their overall life.
Yeah, no, he was a good dude. So we're happy to have him on the show. All right. It's time for my favorite part of the program. Now it's called the Clubhouse. This is the game. And this week's game, Mike, we're going to play This or That. Okay. Are you familiar with this game?
Sure. It sounds simple enough.
Right. It's literally three words. It's this or that. So I'm going to say two things, and then you quickly tell me this or that.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Paper or plastic?
Paper.
Boat or plane?
Plane.
Not today. Well, painting or drawing?
Ooh, let's go with drawing.
I can't see you doing either one of those.
Well, probably not, but I, if I'm picking one.
Right, okay. Reading or writing? Yeah.
So definitely neither, but we'll go with reading. Okay. I suck at writing.
What do you do?
I play golf. I play golf, man.
Singing or dancing?
Singing.
Oh, yeah. That I've seen that live in person.
Yeah.
I've seen the stick in a late night karaoke bar after pops.
That's right.
I agree with that. T-shirts or sweaters?
T-shirts.
Flowers or trees?
Trees.
Google or Bing?
Google. I mean,
whatever.
Bing even a choice?
Bing is only a choice when you mistype some other URL.
True.
That's the only way you get to Bing.com.
Yeah, absolutely.
Frozen yogurt or ice cream?
Ooh, ice cream.
Blue or green eyes?
Blue eyes.
Witches or wizards?
Let's go with witches.
All right. Fire or ice?
Fire.
Golf or wife?
Wife is the only answer because she lets me play golf.
It did take a little longer on that one.
No, I know. I know my. I know. I know my place. She will see this. It's wife all the way.
T-shirts and sweaters was an instant answer. Golf or wife took a bit. Took a couple beats. At Stick and Hack Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being a part of the Stick and Hack Nation. StickandHack.com. Become a member today of the greatest golf club in the world without the course. Thanks to Dr. Rob Bell, drrobbell.com. Mike, proud of you. Great show. See you later.
Thanks, buddy. Peace out, guys.
The Stick and Hack Show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.